This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are going to talk about our neighbors to the south and our relationships with them, particularly in the economic sphere. Arizona, Mexico, particularly Arizona, Sonora Economic Development. Our guest are Patrick Welch. He's a partner. They call you member now. I think that's the old term is partner. With Jennings Strauss, one of the major Phoenix law firms that does a lot of work in Mexico, and at least he does. And Emilio Gaynor, who is the Director of International Development for Chicanos por la Causa, which I think some of old-timers here may recognize more as a community activist group. It's pretty large enterprise these days, and we'll talk about what you're doing and in the course of discussion. But I'm going to start with Patrick, because you were involved as, I think, the chair of a recent Arizona town hall on the subject of Arizona-Mexican trade. We might talk about that and then let you just go generally into the issue of the importance of trade with Mexico and what some of the issues are.
Sure. Mike, thanks again for having me. I'm really excited to be on the show today and appreciate the opportunity to talk about the good work that the Arizona-Mexico Town Hall is doing.
Jennings, and I mean, 30 seconds on what's the – we've done Arizona Town Hall stuff before, but it helped. That to
sure.
Some listeners, that's going to be what's that. So.
Well, the Arizona Town Hall in 2016 explored a great big town hall, three-day program that you're familiar with, that they typically do down in Tucson, that explored the importance of the partnerships between Arizona and Mexico, in particular, particularly Sonora and Arizona.
And I think the point I'd make about Arizona Town Hall, it's been around here for 50 or 60 years. They traditionally did two topics a year on everything from education, school finance. This is a project of Arizona Town Hall.
Partnership between Arizona and Mexico, and what does it mean to the state of Arizona? In this case, one of the recommendations that came out of that three-day program was we need to get the Sonoran voice. There was only maybe a half a dozen Sonorans that participated up at the program in 16 in Tucson. And Tara Jackson, the president of the town hall, and I spoke afterwards. And one of the recommendations that came out of that town hall in 16 was, let's get down into Mexico and get the perspective of the Mexicans. We heard what Arizona has to say about it. We're partners in this. Let's get the Arizona, the Sonoran perspective.
Well, you got my interest. What kind of things did you hear from Mexican citizens? Really, I assume mostly Mexican businessmen.
Well, actually, it's pretty varied, surprisingly. The town hall philosophy is one of getting diverse perspectives, and that certainly rang through on our trip to Mexico. This was the second annual trip down to Mexico. We actually did one last year as well. So we had some momentum that we were building off of that was really exciting. We ended up having, I think, about 50 people attend the event down in Sonora at the Lucerna Hotel in Hermosillo, which is a nice business hotel down there. We had people that were from municipal government, state government, private enterprise, business working groups, business associations, even members of various Native American tribes that have relations on both sides of the border.
Toronto Adam, in particular.
Exactly.
They're in this horrific situation where there's a fence bisecting the Indian reservation, half of which is in Arizona, a third or so of which is in Mexico, and they have to drive around a fence entirely within their own reservation.
Yeah, we had a representative from that community last year attend, and that was a big topic in terms of how we can work together on a state and federal level to address the issue.
So what kind of things did you hear from the Mexican side in particular?
Well, the Mexican side in particular, the big focus that we talked about was the importance of developing partnerships at a local level. You hear a lot of rhetoric, obviously, on the national level that is a little bit divisive at this point. So one of the things that we looked at and one of the themes that came out was how the history of Arizona and Sonora at this point is something that we can build off of. It's Emilio and I having conversations with our counterparts on the ground in Sonora. It's speaking to the people on the ground level on a daily basis. How can we improve investment, tourism, infrastructure, industry, along a cooperative nature for this mega region that the two governors have touted as an important objective of their administrations? And it was a lot of positive conversation on that front.
I want to bring Emilio into the conversation. You're with Chicanos por La Causa. Why should the average Arizona citizen care?
Well, thank you, Mike, again, and I really appreciate the invitation and thank you for the opportunity to be on your show. Because the Arizona and Sonora economies and cultures are integrated. They're completely integrated. There's trade that's been happening since before our states were states.
Well, and first of all, where we sit right now in a studio in Phoenix was once part of Mexico.
That is correct.
And if you live in Tucson, it was part of Mexico even longer.
That is correct. And the family connections and the business connections between Sonora and Arizona are extensive. And at any time there's a disruption in that trade and in that relationship, it affects both sides of the border. There's a saying in Mexico that if the U.S. sneezes, Mexico gets a cold. And that's because and that saying is something that we agree with here too, is that anytime there is a disruption in the economy or in trade, Mexico is affected directly, but so is Arizona.
I wonder if either of you would care to take a crack at what is that trade look? You'll cite a number, but really, what's going north? What's going south? What's the pattern of what that trade looks like?
Well, in terms of just impact, if you look at Mexico as a world economy, it's the 15th largest economy in the world. By 2050, I believe it's expected to be the fifth largest. Mm-hmm. Two-way trade between Arizona and Mexico is just over $16 billion, I think, in 2017. We have, it's 7.9 million, excuse me, billion in imports from Mexico, and we export about 7.5 billion.
Where's that rank? I mean, you say a number, you lose people when you say it's, 8 billion. That sounds like a big number, but how big is it?
Arizona.
Compared to, Canada, Britain, Japan, where does it stack up in relationship to trade with other countries?
Well, I'll jump in real quick. Arizona's number one trading partner is Mexico. So it is.
Okay, yep. Number one. All number right. One. That's the answer.
Yep. Right.
So, and that is about 72% of that trade is in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So it's significant. It's significant in the world of employment and creating employment and jobs.
Now, is that Mexican plants making stuff that we're buying here or Arizona manufactured goods that are going south?
Well, I think it's there's a trade-off in this relationship with Mexico. There are factories in Mexico, but much of the product is traded between through the maquiladora industry, the inbound industry.
You might explain what that is.
The maquiladora industry is really an industry where part of the product is manufactured in Mexico and the other part is manufactured in the U.S. And it could travel the border a couple or more times as this process takes place. So it creates jobs on both sides of the border.
And I think what the maquiladora process does is it allows that to occur free of tariffs and things.
Tariff, and it makes us extremely competitive with other markets around the world. Mm-hmm. So by reducing those costs and creating jobs on both sides of the border, now you're competing with countries like China that compete heavily on the labor cost issues.
Which for Arizona has the benefit of proximity.
Well, the geographic areas, yeah. I mean, just is the big piece of it. But this nearshoring model that the maquiladora industry is a part of is one of the competitive advantages that Amelia was talking about. In the past, you go and the big idea was, we need to, go get cheap manufacturing in China, Korea, wherever it may be. Companies began to realize as localization became more important that being near your customer, being in the market and manufacturing in the market where you are selling is of vital importance. You know, Arizona and Sonora have the benefit of not only the geography, but the language, the culture that Emilio spoke about earlier. That's one of the biggest reasons why multinational companies are now looking at the mega region as a prime destination to come, as opposed to looking at exporting jobs or manufacturing overseas to Asia, for example.
Which is, of course, the image that you get in a lot of the political discussion is the threat of migration of jobs. I don't want to leave that hanging. I have to leave that hanging because we've got a break for just a moment. We'll be back in the think tank. We're discussing Arizona-Mexico trade.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're talking Mexico-Arizona trade. Patrick Welch, partner at Jennings Strauss. Emilio Gaynor, Director of International Development for Chicanos por la Causa. I want to ask you, Emilio, think about the various kinds of things that are involved in trade between Arizona and Mexico. What are the big items?
Well, we talked a little bit about manufacturing, which is a huge contributor to the economy on both sides of the border. But one that people don't talk about, unless you're on the border and you deal with it, is produce. Millions of dollars of produce cross through the Nogales, Arizona border, and the produce is directed throughout the United States. So we're a hub for distribution for produce. We're a hub for transportation of produce, and that creates a significant amount of jobs in our state. I'm going to let Patrick talk more about those numbers, but I can tell you that the Fresh Produce Association of the Americas has reported that significant trade happens because of the distribution of produce through Nogales.
Well, Patrick, in the break, you pointed out to me, and I found this to be staggering, a majority, and it was not just a bare majority, of the produce that comes to the United States from Mexico comes through Nogales.
Yeah, that's true. I think the statistic is that more than 90% of the produce imported to the United States comes through that port. And one of the big topics that you asked about at the town hall was the importance of infrastructure along the border to get that produce, to get those people across the border. You know, tourism is another big topic that was talked about in addition to just the goods crossing the border.
When you say infrastructure, are we talking
railways, the border infrastructure itself? One of the big accomplishments that occurred over the last couple of years was the construction of the new port of entry at Mariposa in
Nogales,
which is a $200 or $300 million project that has increased the rate at which trucks and people are crossing the border. So,
because if there's a clog, a backlog, then it becomes less economic to go there.
Well, the waits. You know, sometimes you may have produce that is time sensitive. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting at the border for 2 hours as a trucker, as opposed to 45 minutes,
labor costs, potential at some point is spoiled fruit.
So yeah, exactly. So one of the things that they've been looking at on both sides of the border in Arizona and Sonora is, and in conjunction with the federal government, is the infrastructure that comes up to the border. In other words, let's get off the border 50 miles on each side. What are the roads looking like there? Mm-hmm. And in improving those roads, Mexico right now, which is Highway 15, which is at where you hit Nogales and you're in Sonora, that road now is undergoing major construction that the federal government in Mexico is investing in to improve those conditions so we can move people more quickly and we can move commerce more quickly, all of which has great economic impact in Arizona.
Just forgive me this interesting little aside. It's a little quiz question
sure.
for you guys here. You know the road between Arizona and Puerto Penasco, where which I know because I drive it all the time,
sure.
a property there. Do you know who built that and why?
I do not know the answer, no.
Who built it?
Yeah.
On the Mexican side?
Yes.
So do you have the answer?
Yeah, I do, and it's fascinating. It was built originally during World War II by the United States Army Corps of Engineers because Puerto Penasco was a backup port if the Japanese bombed out Long Beach. And so that's why in years ago riding that road, it didn't seem all that different from Arizona 85. It's this fundamentally the same road. And I've over the last 10, 12 years when I've been riding, I've noticed they're making improvements on it. But it's really the same kind of road, and it's just an interesting little anecdote. It may not have a whole lot to do with this.
Well, I think it does. I think it does.
Well, it just shows interconnectedness.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, way back in World War II, we had to work together because we're neighbors. And it gave access to the military in case of an emergency. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, there were all kinds of things going on in Arizona. We had a fellow on here wrote a book about all the military supplies that were being kept in the Flagstaff area, which was contingency if the Japanese invaded California. You had to have stuff that was sufficiently inland that it was protected.
Well, Mike, that cooperation along that road continues today. And one of the things that is an important thing is that ADOT is actively working with their counterparts on the Mexican side to improve signage along that border along that highway, all the way down to Rocky Point, Puerto Peñasco, for purposes of signage with in English and Spanish signs, I understand, and also just helping people understand some of the dangers or precarious areas of the.
Well, it has improved. I can tell you over the last 12 years, it used to be that you had that one lane going in each direction, and if you went off onto the edge, you fell off. And now there's a the thing on the edge of the road. So if you overstripe the line, you don't fall off 6 inches.
No, we travel down there a lot as well, and I feel very comfortable and safe on that road as well.
Okay, we will be back in the think tank discussing Arizona-Mexico economic relations in the think tank on KTR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're in the think tank. We're discussing the significance and the nature of economic relationships between Arizona and Mexico. And generally speaking, that means between Arizona and the state of Sonora, which is on our southern border. Emilio, in the break, we were discussing the issue of how does a strong economy in Sonora impact Arizona?
Well, I want to talk specifically about something that I was reading recently and talking to a friend in Tucson about. Having a strong economy in Sonora provides the ability for the people of Sonora to come up and spend their money in Arizona. I mean, it's basic economics, right? But about $22 million visitors go to Tucson during the holidays. And that's a tremendous impact on Tucson during the Thanksgiving
22
holidays.
That must count double. If somebody comes twice, they count them twice.
I'm sure it does.
But I mean, that's a lot of people.
It's about 22 million visitors. Visits, maybe. And they come to Arizona each year. And the main purpose is to shop, studies. They come up for Thanksgiving and they take advantage of the deals in the stores. And they come up during the holiday Christmas and New Year's holidays.
Can you explain just something about that? I think a lot of people be curious. They see, you know, there's a border. When people cross the border, they get captured, all that kind of stuff. But there is a whole lot of legal. What does it take for a Mexican to be able to legally cross the border for purposes of recreation, tourism, or shopping?
Well, I mean, the State Department provides them with a visa. And then in order to get further than Tucson, they have to go in and get a permit that's called a 994. They have to prove that they're working, that they have bank accounts, that they are financially stable, and they have something bringing them back to Mexico.
But you can, so without that latter certification, on the strength of, I assume, a passport and a visa, you can go to Tucson, but not to Phoenix.
That's correct.
That is correct. So, and when they do finally make it up to Phoenix and they're shopping in Arizona, the average purchase is $1,000 to $5,000 per person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we want to multiply it into millions and billions, we can do that. But it's significant when you're talking about 22 million visitors.
And I can explain that, by the way, having shopped both sides of the border. Most manufactured goods are way cheaper on this side.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they come here. Yes. And by the way, the reverse is true if you're buying produce. Anything that is not, so if you're buying a box of cereal, that's cheaper in the U.S. If you're buying fruits and vegetables, that's cheaper in Mexico.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the recommendations that came out of the town hall when we were in Mexico was, and this has been a topic that's been going around for a number of years now, but it was revisited at the town hall, was the idea of expanding the 75-mile area where you don't need a permit. In other words, we want to expand economic development throughout the entire state of Arizona. Working with the federal government, working with our congressional delegation to affect change at the federal level so we can now have Mexican tourists not just get to Tucson, Marana, but get to Flagstaff and go skiing, Grand Canyon.
You say you need to prove income and the like to get to cross to get to Phoenix. What do you need to get to Tucson?
Well, the process is you have to go to this. You have to go to the consulate. You make an appointment, and there you present all your paperwork, and that paperwork demonstrates all of these things: income, stability, etc.
So you'd probably see in Sonora, you'd probably go to the American consulate in Hermosillo.
The American consulate in Hermosillo. There you get the United States visa.
Issued by the U.S. State Department.
The U.S. after they've done a background check on you, basically. Okay. Then that gives you access to travel in free zones, which is up to Tucson in Arizona. Mm-hmm. If you want to go further, there's a further check that the Border and Customs Division does on the border, and that's maybe they ask you for additional information. They look at your crossing history. They look at different things on the computer, and then they issue you a different little permit that allows you to travel throughout the United States.
And I'd point out to people, there's an analogous thing on the other side. The Mexicans have what they call the free zone. You can pass and go south. You can go to Puerto Penasco, Rocky Point. But there's a certain point, I don't know, I haven't gone that far, where you need additional documentation. I believe a Mexican visa.
Yeah, you need a Mexican visa going into Mexico. You should get a Mexican visa going into Mexico, period. There is a free zone after Nogales and Hermosillo. But for the vehicles, for your car, you have to register your vehicle. You can't go any further than Sonora, the free zone of Sonora, without registering your vehicle with the federal government.
Okay, I want to bring in Mary Melcher. Mary is a retired CPA and business owner here in Phoenix, and she wants to ask you guys some questions about her experiences in Mexico. And in fact, she was contemplating at some point doing business down there. And I want to turn it over to you. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you.
Your question.
Yes.
Your story.
Just a little bit of background. My husband and I had a home on the beach in Mexico at Choya Bay from the early 1960s through the 1990s. We used to rent the land from Mr. Brown, who was I believe he had dual citizenship. He was a Mexican, American or something. I never was clear. We rented the land from him. We knew that the land on the above the tide line, as close as it was not the it was not really private property. It was really federal property. But Mr. Brown, of course, said that he did have authority to rent the land to us. In the 70s and 80s, they began to tell us that Mr. Brown did not have authority to rent that land and that there would be a change which would involve each homeowner along that area to put up $50,000, and then they would pay rent after that, and they would have like a 50-year lease. So they had many, many meetings which we attended, and we could never, never get a straight answer. There were American lawyers, there were Mexican lawyers, and there was just mass confusion. Some of the people that I knew put up the $50,000 and were evicted anyway. Lost their homes. We decided either we'd go down and just burn it or we'd have to sell it. Luckily for us, we found a willing buyer and we sold it. We have not gone back. So shortly after we sold that in Ensenada over on Baja, the Mexican government appropriated quite a few homes. I think there were well over 150 American-owned homes there, some of them in the million-dollar range, and they just flat took them away. And that was the end of that. So I guess what I would like to know is what has changed that would make Americans feel confident that this would not happen to them. What has the Arizona Mexican Town Hall or anyone else done to assure Americans that the Mexican government is going to stand behind these kind of arrangements without coming in and just appropriating their house?
Okay, that sounds to me like a legal question. So that I think that goes to you, Patrick.
Well, Mary,
I think it's a fair. The short version of the question is: hey, I had some stuff taken from me. Why would an American businessman right now want to go? How do they know that that's something like that's not going to happen again?
Well, Mary, first of all, nice to meet you, and thank you for the question and participating in the show today. You know, my experience over the last 13 years going to Sonora, my wife is from Hermosillo, Sonora. So I've got a real affinity both on a family level and on a professional level for Mexico. So my experiences have been different, quite frankly. My experiences have been, and maybe it's an issue of time. I know that you were talking between the 1960s and the early 1990s. I can tell you that within the last...
Excuse me, the late 1990s.
Within the last, since I've been in Arizona since 2007, the experiences that I've seen in the legal system in Mexico have demonstrated developed legal institutions, rule of law. Certainly they've got areas to improve on as compared to the U.S. legal system. You got to remember, you're going to a different country when you're buying property in Mexico. So there are different institutions in terms of the legal process. It's actually a different system. It's based upon the civil law system as opposed to the common law system, which we have in the United States. So my recommendation every time I speak with a client or someone calls me or, you know, at a coffee shop or over a drink asks me about, oh, well, how's things in Mexico? Well, I think you got to approach every situation like you do in the United States, just as you do in Mexico. You've got to do your due diligence. You've got to have very sophisticated professionals around you, whether that's an attorney, an accountant in Mexico. That also includes a notary public that can help to address some of the issues with respect to the legal issues. But I think documentation is very important in Mexico, just as it is here in the United States. So those are some
I don't know if you had one of these, Mary. And if you were leasing land out of it, might not. I do know one thing is different about the land registration system. In the United States, you can go down and look up a title, and
right.
It's a pretty good indication who owns stuff. When I bought property in the Sandy Beach area, just a couple of miles from Choya Bay, you get this big fat book, and it describes kind of the history of the land from, I guess, from time one, whatever that is. And your documentation of ownership is that book. The problem is that you don't know if somebody else has some other book that might be a stronger claim. That, as near as I can tell, there's no central registration, and so that's a little unnerving.
Exactly.
So, my experience is different on that. There is public registries, and particularly in Puerto Peñasco. I mean, I have a matter that I've been recently handling, and we needed to do a title search with respect to
meaning
the property.
If I lose my book, I'm not out of luck.
Yeah.
I've guarded that with my life.
In other words, your Fiel del Comiso, your Mexican bank trust book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Emilio, you said something?
Yeah, I'd like to add something to that because I actually I'm not going to say I feel the pain, but I do understand the concerns we just heard. And the good thing...
Could I let you pick this up after the break?
Absolutely.
You go first. We're running over. We are going to be back in just a minute for final segment in the Think Tank talking about Arizona-Mexico trade issues.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back. Concluding segment on Arizona-Mexico economic issues. Emilio Gaynor, you're Director of International Development for Chicanos por la Causa, and you wanted to answer Mary's question. Mary was, if you weren't with us the last segment, had a property in Rocky Point. Choya Bay is one of the oldest communities. It doesn't surprise me if there's a problem that's there. That goes back, I think, that area to the 50s or before. And basically lost her property. You wanted to You wanted to answer her question.
Well, yeah, I want to make sure I understand, though. Did you say that you lost your property, or did you sell it?
No, some people I know lost their properties.
Right, okay.
We decided we would either sell it, or quite honestly, I decided that I would go down and set it on fire before I would let them take it away. Because we did do our due diligence, and we did do our best to understand what the requirements were, but we never could get a clear enough answer. And I think it's important for Americans who want to buy a house down there on the beach that they understand, do not invest more money than you can afford to lose.
Okay.
Because Mexican law and Mexican courts are not like the United States. They really are not. And a lot of it is susceptible to whatever regime happens to be in control in Mexico City.
So I agree with you with and some of that.
The people who, the 150 retirees who lost their homes in Ensenada in 1999 would not be comforted by any of these answers.
So that's why I want to give you an answer that hopefully will change the perspective a little bit. So recently, and specifically during the town hall this past week, we heard and we were reassured that there's a certification process for real estate agents in Sonora. So they have to go through a process. Previously, anybody could be a real estate agent. Now there's a process where you have to be certified by a state by a state-approved process so that you can call yourself a real estate agent. So that's something that actually gives you some comfort, and that's something that hadn't happened back in the late 90s. Also, what happened in the late 90s, I was actually involved peripherally on some of those cases because I was working with the Arizona-Mexico Commission. The Arizona-Mexico Commission is a commission that is run out of the governor's office. They have 16 committees in all different areas, and it's a continuous collaboration between Arizona and Sonora. And during those days, the commission was very involved in fixing this issue that you suffered. And it's unfortunate that it happened after some of your friends lost their homes. But the reason that they took this on at a state, at a leadership level was because of those losses. So a lot of those things have been fixed. And if you take a look at Mexico, there's huge American communities in Mexico all the way down to Guanajuato and to Guadalajara and Chapala and Sonora. And, the problems recently have been less and less because of, the pressure of the American economy. If you lose your buyers and your support in tourism and people are treated unfairly in Mexico because they're American, then you stop going there and you lose economically. So I think Mexico has really taken the steps in many ways to fix this issue. And the registration system that Patrick was talking about is something that's real. And recently, there's been a lot more integration between attorney firms and working together as it relates to the legal process in Mexico. And even though it's a different process, we understand it much better now. And many more attorneys have taken the time to learn the Mexican law. So you have a choice now. You have a choice and you have the ability to make informed decisions and protect yourself.
I want to move off of it because we're running out of time here. And there's one thing I think that is just current that I really would like both of you guys to respond to, especially having met with Sonoran businessmen. And the question is this. Out of the White House, you've heard a lot of vituperative language about Mexico, about Mexicans. Has any of that, what impact, if any, has that had on the kinds of discussions that you were involved with and hearing from the other side of the border?
Well, from my perspective, in the discussions that we were having at the Arizona-Mexico Town Hall, it's certainly on their radar and it's not going unnoticed. Have businessmen on both sides of the border, in light of the rhetoric, lift it up on the gas a little bit, put the brake on plans. I certainly think that has happened. But the general consensus that we reached as participants at the town hall is that the relationship that Arizona and Sonora, that our governors have, that the Arizona-Mexico Commission and its counterpart, La Comisión Sonora-Arizona, has, is is something that has been around for years and years and years. And those relationships are strong, and the mega region is open for business. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Emilio, did you want to comment on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Chicanos por la Causa, as we mentioned, is a large organization, serves many, many people, over 260,000 people in three states. So, and we're an economic development engine. And I'd love to get into that another time, and hopefully you'll call us to interview. And
I'd love to do that. We're running out of time. We ought to do this again.
I'll make it very quick. So as I've worked with the people that we're trying to engage in Mexico, we have met significant investors that want to develop properties and do projects in North America and the United States and Mexico. And during the rhetoric of the election, many of these investors decided that they were going to hold off and go to Canada because Canada was a friendly country to their investment. Recently, with some of the rhetoric we hear, we did hear in this town hall specifically that the rhetoric affects and it has a ripple effect, because if you are treated poorly in the U.S. when you come here and you have they've actually talked about people being treated poorly in stores.
I can understand how that could happen in the environment that we're in.
And that gets back to Mexico as a, you know, everybody's family member, everybody's a friend, everybody talks to each other. And it's
at
word
the
of
margins,
mouth.
Maybe we don't have to go shopping in Tucson.
So then they end up traveling through Mexico instead, the tourism dollars and investment that happens in the United States and Arizona ends up back in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, too, that's important to remember is we can't control what's going on in Washington, but we can control what's going on in Arizona and Sonora, and that's what the Arizona Town Hall is trying to do.
Real quick, 10 seconds each. Presidential election in Mexico. I wonder if this rhetoric has impacted the candidates of Juan López Obrador, who is more anti-American and socialist in his outlook.
You're a pollster, and I've seen the polls that
he's number one.
He
looks like he's going to win right now.
Mexico is going to have a significant change regardless of what happens during this election.
That's another show. We'll do it. Thank you very much, Patrick Walsh and Emilio Gaynor. In the think tank, you can find an old podcast of this at MikeO'Neill.org, and the current ones, all of them are available at KTAR.com.